9:05 here on this Wednesday morning. It is the 12th day of December 2018, and I'm John Reed. You're listening to News Radio WRVA, and as we do every month, we have an hour to sit down with Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam, and he is kind enough to come into the studio here in Richmond to take your phone calls, to have a conversation with us about issues of the day. And I'd like to encourage you to call us this morning at 345-1140, 345-1140. Got a couple of people in queue at the moment who have questions or comments for the governor. We're going to go to them in just a couple of moments. But Governor Northam, happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas. Glad to have you here.
John, thank you. It's always good to be with you, and hope your listeners are doing well.
Yo, I think we're off to a good start today. Hey, before we get into policy discussions, you know, everyone has been talking about the snow left over from Sunday, and I wondered if you had a reaction about how state officials have handled the road clearing efforts. And one burden you don't have is deciding whether to put the buses out on the road and reopen schools. But I think a lot of people are kind of looking at 3 days of school closures, wondering what's up. Do you have thoughts about both of those?
That was a major snowstorm that came through.
It
here
was.
And I'm sure your listeners remember they were calling for 3 to 6 inches. And, mm-hmm. you know, we prepared for that. We in Richmond got 12 inches in some areas. If you go to the south side and the southwest of Virginia, 18, some like in Floyd County, 24 inches of snow. So, you know, we stayed and monitored through the weekend and on Monday. And, you know, I'm proud of our VDOT folks and our other agencies. Our first responders did well. But we any time that this happens, John, we review our response and see what we did well and where we can make improvements. And, you know, this is only December. We've got a few months left in front of us, and I suspect we'll have some other significant storms. So we just want to do everything that we can to be ready to make sure that, you know, people are safe on our highways. A couple quick points, if I could, I will make. You know, when we warn individuals to stay off our roads, I hope that people will take that seriously. Just as an example, we had 4 state troopers get hit. Their cars, there were some minor injuries. Thankfully, they're doing well. But people just have to slow down and again, heed our warnings. As you know, a little bit over a month ago, we lost one of our firefighters in Hanover County. A fire truck had responded on I guess it was 295. Just to the north of Richmond, and a truck ran into the back of the fire truck with lights, you know, flashing. So I would just ask people to be careful and slow down. The other thing I would just mention briefly on our way over here, there are some individuals that leave the snow on top of their cars, and I saw some 6 to 8 inches on their roofs, and they just need to be reminded to please take a little extra time and clear their cars of that snow, because when they're going 55, 65 miles an hour, when that comes off and it's, you know, frozen, it can be very dangerous to other motorists. So, you know, just use some common sense, good judgment out there, and we'll try to do everything that we can to keep folks safe and be able to get them from point A to point B.
Yeah. Well, that, especially when you're talking about the first responders who are out there, that's important. Did you have a reaction about the schools being closed for these 3 days? It seems like early in the season to make that judgment, especially if we think it's going to be a terrible winter ahead.
You know, we did well. The primary roads were cleared fairly quickly. But when you get, you know, 8 to 12 inches of snow and then you have freezing temperatures, it's just hard to clear that up. And then it freezes again at night. And so they're just trying to be careful. They, you know, obviously want our bus drivers, our buses to be safe, and individuals that are, you know, their children, they're our most precious commodity. Mm-hmm. So they stay on the conservative side, and that's certainly understandable. But here we are early in the season, and already 3 school days have been used up.
Yeah, got to burn through those built-in
days. Yeah, they may be halfway into the summer at this rate.
Let's hope not. All right, I've got a long list of questions for you, but you know what? We have a lot of folks who have called 345-1140 already, and I don't want to leave them holding. So let's go right to some of our listeners right now. John, you are on the air here on News Radio WRVA with Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam.
Good morning, Ralph. Thanks for taking the call. My question, I'll get right to it, is what are you going to do about 95 north of Fredericksburg? It's a parking lot every day, and the Easy Pass lanes are supposed to help with that congestion, but they do their crazy, there's an accident on 95, and then the Easy Pass lanes go to $20 because they say they have dynamic pricing based on traffic flow. And I just think that their price gouging of the Easy Pass lanes is causing more problems than it is giving us relief. They're supposed to be helping us. You're coming south, you know, Dumfries will be $2, the next exit will be $3, and then Quantico, because it's popular, will be $15. Hmm. I think that the government should step in and regulate, and they shouldn't be able to price gouge everybody because there's an accident.
All right. Thanks, John.
John, a great question. And as you've just mentioned, Fredericksburg, just to the north of Fredericksburg on 95, is a real bottleneck. There are a lot of ideas that are being floated. We actually were up there a few weeks ago to announce the expansion of the bridge coming over the Rappahannock River. Hopefully that will help open some things up. There are some senators in that area that have actually looked at opening up the extra lanes during rush hours. So that's being discussed with our Secretary of Transportation. I will tell you, we are well aware of the challenges, and it's not just 95, John. I mean, I know you travel that route, but 64 can get bottlenecked as well. We're talking about making improvements and expanding I-81. A lot of the discussions are on how to pay for these and whether we use tolls. I'm not a big fan, as are a lot of other people, of taxing individuals. So, but the money for these roads doesn't fall out of the sky. So I think you will see some serious discussions during this upcoming session of how to pay for these projects. And I have said this on the air before, given credit where credit's due, Governor McDonnell in 2013 put the transportation package on the table. We now have revenue coming into our transportation coffers to help pay for these projects. In 2014, the SMART scale was added, and that takes a lot of the politics out of which projects are going to be built next. But obviously, to your point, we've got to be fair with people. It has to be in a manner that people aren't spending an arm and a leg, and we just need to make sure that people are able to get from point A to point B. But to your point, 95 is a bottleneck. Right there north of Fredericksburg is one. We're well aware of it, and it's something that we're addressing.
Is there an appetite to deal with this in this upcoming session?
Absolutely, John. And something that I have been really pleased with is that, you know, I'll give you the example of I-81. I mean, mm-hmm. just so many trucks. We had a backup of miles during this recent storm mm-hmm. when trucks were disabled on 81. And we know what we need to do. We have committed over $2 billion, with a B, dollars to expand I-81. And there's some great discussion from legislators out in that part of Virginia as to how to pay for this. So I think you'll see some good progress being made this year.
You know, John sounded like he was in his car on 95, and I thought he handled himself pretty well, because if you'd caught me certain moments when I'm stuck on 95, I wouldn't have been as polite. So.
I agree. And, you know, we had some folks come into Richmond yesterday afternoon, and there was a tractor trailer that was disabled around the Bass Pro Shop just north of Richmond, and it was a 45-minute backup. So they were not in good spirits when they arrived in our office, as might be expected.
You deal with it on a regular basis. All right, Suzanne is holding. Suzanne, you're on News Radio WRVA with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, sir. It's awful nice to talk to you. My husband is a VMI cadet, so he shares your manhood there. But anyway, my concern is with the folks that get out here on the road, and I know it's fun to play in the snow, but you're endangering people's lives. Now, I lived in New Jersey for 3.5 years. I'm originally from the Richmond area, but I lived up there. When the governor declared a state of an emergency for a snowfall like we had, if you got caught out on the road and you didn't have a really good reason to be out there, you were ticketed and your vehicle was towed. Mm. So maybe we won't be as rude and tow folks' cars, but I tell you what, these troopers that have been hit and the first responders that have been hit and killed and injured, somebody needs to start looking at that real hard.
And well, that's aggressive.
Susan, you make an excellent point. And, you know, we're going to have storms, whether they be snowstorms or hurricanes in the future. And, again, I would just remind the listeners, when we declare states of emergency, if unless you absolutely have to be out on the road, you know, please stay home and please stay safe. And you know, what that does is if people will stay off the roads, then our first responders can do what they need to do. Our, you know, electric companies can get out and restore electricity. But, you know, we, again, these state troopers and other first responders, they just do such a good job for us in Virginia. And we need to do everything that we can to keep them safe. So, you know, so when you decide whether you're going to go out on the road or not, think about these individuals. They are just like you and me. They have families that love them, and as they come in the morning to work, they want to go home safely at night. So just keep that in mind.
Good to talk about, especially on the front end of the winter. You're listening to News Radio WRVA and Ask the Governor. We're back more with Ralph Northam in just a few moments. 9:21 here on this Wednesday morning. It's John Reed with you on News Radio WRVA, and we continue our monthly conversation with Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam, our Ask the Governor program. The governor live here in our studio in the state capitol in Richmond. And I wanted to ask you, Governor, about a press conference that you held yesterday announcing budget amendments that would lead to, what, $268 million in new investments in public education. That sounds great. Where does that money come from? What's the plan here?
Great question, John. And, you know, first of all, Virginia's economy is doing very well. Our receipts, our revenue in October of this year were up 10% over last year. So, you know, our unemployment rate is at 2.9%. Forbes just announced Virginia was the fourth best state in which to do business. So, you know, really in a bipartisan way, things are going very well. So we've got increased revenues. As you know, the federal government has made some changes. There was a case regarding the internet sales tax, so mm-hmm. we'll have some revenue coming into our general fund from that. We've had some changes with the federal tax code. With this money, there are several things I think we need to focus on. One is continuing to put money in our reserves for what we call our rainy day fund. So we're going to hopefully moving toward 8% of our whole budget in Virginia will be in reserves, which is something that our AAA bond rating agencies are very pleased with. I want to be able to give folks in Virginia a pay raise. I think people that are working hard need to have returns on this money. So we have the earned income tax credit, which can get a little bit complicated, but that's for individuals making less than $54,000. We have the earned income tax credit in Virginia, but it's not totally refundable. So we want to move in that direction. But yesterday, to your point, we announced that over $250 million will be infused into our education system, and starting with our teachers. We need to realize that if we're going to recruit talented teachers and be able to retain them, we have to be able to pay them. And right now, our teachers in Virginia are making about $9,000 less than the national average. Mm-hmm. So they were given a 3% pay raise last year. I've added 2% to that. So in July of this year, they will, if this goes through, our teachers will receive a 5% pay raise. That's the largest pay raise that they will have received in over 15 years. So that's good. We've put some other money in some other areas that the schools will be able to use at their discretion. So good things are happening this year for education. Again, my budget is just the introduction. Obviously, we'll sit down with folks on both sides of the aisle from the House and the Senate and put our heads together and really hopefully at the end of the day do what's in the best interest of Virginia. But yesterday was an exciting day for education. We're going to make some announcements later today regarding conservation in Virginia, our environment. We're going to do some things for our state police and our deputies and sheriffs, especially with their health insurance when they retire, put some money into broadband. So we have a lot of ideas on where we can invest this responsibly in Virginia.
And where things stand now, do we operate at a surplus?
I don't know if I'd call it a surplus, but obviously we have revenue coming into Virginia mm-hmm. that we haven't had in the past, probably well over $500 million. So, you know, again, we
certainly
just,
not a deficit the federal government.
Yeah, and that's one good thing, a good point you make, John. In Virginia, we balance our budget every year. They don't in Washington. And I believe the deficit's over $21 trillion now.
It's outrageous.
Which, I mean, someone's going to inherit that, and that's not fair. But You know, we do well in Virginia. We're, as I say, we're lean and mean, and we balance our budget each year. And again, because of how the economy is doing in Virginia, we've got some money to, you know, hopefully that we can invest responsibly.
Very good. We want to take a few calls from folks who have been holding at 345-1140. Ann, you are on the air on News Radio WRVA with Governor Northam.
Good morning, Governor and John. I've been listening, and my question is on the same topic of education. I don't live in Richmond, but I am a devoted WRVA listener, and I'm hearing that the Richmond City public schools are in very bad condition with their buildings, and that to me signals that maybe the rest of their programs aren't the best. And I'm wondering if there's anything that the Commonwealth could do to get Richmond City schools improved, because I really think it's a disgrace that that situation is in the capital of the Commonwealth.
Very good.
Thank you so much for your call, and I agree with you. There is power in every child, and we want to make sure that all of our children in Virginia have access to a world-class education. So a couple of things. I already mentioned the raises for our teachers. There are other funds that I'm introducing. There's an at-risk fund for those children that are in low socioeconomic areas, $35 million. That's a discretionary fund that I will allow the schools to use. There's another one that's called per pupil. That's also going to be $35 million for the schools to use at their discretion. And then one of the other things you mentioned is our structures of our schools. And there are schools, and it's not just Richmond, but throughout Virginia that need to be rebuilt. And so we have what's called a literary fund, and that's traditionally the pot of money, if you will, that low interest loans are taken out of for localities to build new schools. And so I am proposing to put $80 million into the literary fund. So I think there are a lot of opportunities to the caller and to the listeners to let you know that we do want to make sure that we provide excellent K-12 education. And this is a year where we have some extra revenue. And again, I'm going to work with people from both sides of the aisle in the House and the Senate, but hopefully we can make education a priority for Virginia.
That seems to be a bipartisan concern, especially as we get ready to come back in January. All right, we're going to take a break now and come back in just a couple of moments. We'll take some more phone calls at 345-1140. I've got one guy who wants to talk to you about the future of medical marijuana in Virginia and then changing banking regulations. I want to talk to you about the pipeline. Got some people who are really hot about some decisions you've made. I'm curious as to your reaction to some of their accusations. All of that when we return here on Ask the Governor, News Radio WRVA. 9:35 here on this Wednesday morning. You're listening to News Radio WRVA live from Richmond, Virginia, the state capital. Our monthly opportunity to chat with Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam. And we enter our second half hour of our Ask the Governor program. I want to go right to some of your calls, folks who have dialed 345-1140 with questions and comments for the governor. We begin with Nick. Nick, you're on the air with Governor Northam.
Hello, Mr. Governor.
How are you doing this morning, Nick?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Good. Next question for you. You know, we're talking earlier about funding for the highways and stuff like that.
Yes.
Excuse me. Yes, sir. I was just saying, like, what is the Commonwealth stance on medical and or recreational use of marijuana, maybe to fund that and other things in the area?
That's a great question, Nick. And just make a couple points. As you know, I'm a physician. I'm a child neurologist. And a couple of years ago, we actually introduced and passed legislation to use marijuana, actually a form of marijuana called CBD oil, cannabidiol oil, for intractable epilepsy. These are children that have seizures that are very difficult to control. And so that was passed, and that's been able to help a lot of children. I actually recommended it for a lot of my patients. Last year, we actually expanded so that if a doctor recommended the use of the oil for any other condition in medicine, then that would be approved as well. So we're making progress. I think the next step, Nick, is to really look at decriminalizing marijuana. It's a Schedule I medication. That means that we can't do the research that we need to do. So that needs to happen at the federal level. And if that were to happen, then we could do the research and have good data. But there are clearly disorders, conditions in healthcare that respond to medical marijuana. For example, pain, and we have the opioid crisis that we're dealing with now. So this could be used instead of opioids. Post-traumatic stress disorder is another area, chronic fatigue syndrome. So there are a lot of medical conditions that would potentially respond to medical marijuana. Again, I think that we need to look at decriminalizing it. There are now five regions, Nick, in Virginia that can process marijuana and produce the oil. So it'll be much more easy to access here in Virginia. So we're making progress, but the next step, I think, would be for the federal government to decriminalize it and allow us to get better data. And then we would certainly be able to use it for a lot of medical conditions. And one last point I would make, Nick, I remind people of this all the time. Probably over 100 of the medications that we use on a daily basis come from plants. So I think we need to be open-minded or more open-minded and look at the potential uses for marijuana as well.
You probably don't have many conservatives who are upset about the medical use. It's when they go up to Washington and they see where it's very, very liberal about having marijuana on you for the recreational use, and you find people who are stoned. I was just in New York, and on every street corner, it looked like somebody was toking up and glazed over eyes. You're not suggesting that that's okay, are you?
No, I'm not. And, you know, we have talked about in Virginia whether it should be legalized, which is much different from being decriminalized. And,
right, okay.
And just I'm not in favor of that. There have been some other states like Colorado that have legalized it, and they've had some issues. So I think we need to kind of tread lightly in that regard. But there certainly are medical conditions that there have potential uses for, and I think we should be open-minded for that.
Well, a lot of folks are finding certain things that they used to loathe appealing because of the potential tax benefits, and I know you wanted to spend a couple of moments talking about tax conformity, a term that I think people are going to hear a lot about when we see the General Assembly reconvene in January. Can you tell us about that?
I will. One other quick point on the marijuana
and
the reason why decriminalizing it is important. There are people that are being locked up for, you know, they may have possession of marijuana, and that ruins their lives. So I think we need to kind of take a look at that and keep these kind of people hopefully out of prisons, because it's obviously very expensive and that's not the best place for them. But as far as taxes, shifting gears here a little bit, as we say, we do have changes in the federal tax code. And each year, and this is usually pretty straightforward, the legislature will pass a bill to conform to the federal tax code. And what that does is it allows the same paperwork to be used, and it eases the filing of taxes for Virginians. And so that's step one, and I have recommended to our legislature, let's continue to do that as they have done in the past. And then the subject of tax reform, which is obviously different from conformity, that's another discussion. And so I think we'll sit down at the table with our friends on both sides of the aisle and talk about whether we should have the earned income tax credit, which I have talked about. There are other ways to skin the cat, as we say. You could increase the threshold at which people pay taxes. You could also increase the standard deduction. It's $3,000 in Virginia right now for a single filer, $6,000 for a couple. It's been increased at the federal level to $24,000. And so there's some people that are advocating that we should increase the deduction. So it gets complicated. But what I look at is that this is taxpayers' money. I would like to level the playing field. The federal tax code changes have helped corporations and high earners. And I think that what we're trying to do is give those that make less than $54,000 a year, make the earned income earned income tax credit totally refundable for them. But there are obviously a lot of options. But so we'll be talking about the tax reform, but that's separate from tax conformity.
All right. Well, that's the primer on that before we deal with it in January when the General Assembly reconvenes. You know, one of the issues that we have spent a lot of time talking about the last 6 months with lawsuits is gerrymandering. And
yes.
Jill is on the line with a question about that. Jill, you're on the air with Ralph Northam.
Hello, Mr. Governor.
Hi, Jill. How are you today?
So. I've been wondering, there's been a whole lot of controversy about gerrymandering, and one party says the other has been gerrymandering for a long time, and then it gets in and it does the same thing. But the thing about it is, I was wondering if it couldn't be put in the state constitution that all voting districts have to be rectangular shaped, where feasible. Of course, obviously, it can't be done at the jagged borders of the state. But it should be put in there that the district has to be rectangular shaped unless there's a specific reason it can't be done. Wouldn't that prevent all these districts that have been gerrymandered and made to look like a salamander and so forth?
Jill, I like the way you're thinking there. It can be a little bit more complicated than just, you know, making it cut up into rectangles. But a couple points I would make. I think it's far time to get rid of the gerrymandering and let people like you, that is the people of Virginia, choose their representatives rather than politicians choosing the voters. And that's what happens when you allow politicians to draw the districts, and that's why we have the issue with the gerrymandering. You made an excellent point. Whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats in the majority, they're going to draw the lines to their advantage. So something that I have been an advocate for since I've been here for 10 years is what we call nonpartisan redistricting, to do everything that we can to get the politics out of drawing these lines. So that will be a constitutional amendment. There are several plans on the table already that will be addressing in the General Assembly. But I would encourage you to talk to your legislators, your delegate and senators, and let them know how strongly you feel about, you know, fair redistricting. Because what's going to happen in 2021, we redraw the lines every 10 years. And so if we're going to make some changes, it needs to be done this year because it has to be a constitutional amendment and it has to be passed 2 years in a row. So this is our last chance before 2021.
Do you think it's possible to even find someone who can be objective? And I mean, they're going to be appointed by you or the Republicans in the House or, you know, how do you take politics out of politics?
Well, and I think that's part of the discussion, John, and a good point you make. It's impossible to get rid of all the politics, but I think you can, you know, with good intentions, at least do everything you can to get some of the politics out of it. And again, right now, there's far too much politics and there's far too much gerrymandering, and we need to put that to come to a close.
All right, we're going to take one more break. We'll come back and take a few more phone calls from folks who have dialed in at 345-1140. And I do want to make sure we get to this question about the pipeline and the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League. They were on our show a couple of days ago and want to make sure we give you an opportunity to respond because they were pretty hostile.
Absolutely.
To you. Yeah. So stay with us here on News Radio WRVA. Ask the Governor continues in just a few moments. Back now live from the WRVA studios in the state capital of Virginia in Richmond, and our monthly opportunity to talk with the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, continues now. Want to make sure we get to some of our callers who've been holding. And Charlie, you are on the air here on WRVA with Ralph Northam. Hi, Charlie.
Thank you. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Quick question. With the change in the federal tax law, we had about $30,000 in deductions, and now a lot of those, including the personal exemption and tax advisor and all that, have gone away. So we're going to be forced to take the standard deduction, unfortunately. So does that mean that I have to take the standard deduction with the state, and we're only going to get like $6,000 in deductions versus the $30,000 we had before?
The way it is set up right now, Charlie, you are correct. And that's why a couple of things need to happen. One is hopefully we can conform and make it a lot more straightforward to file your taxes. But then the further discussion, and I think you will see this play out during the General Assembly session this year, is you know, how to deal with comprehensive tax reform. And again, not to be redundant, but whether to talk about the earned income tax credit, whether to talk about increasing the standard deduction, which it sounds like in your case would help you. So there are a lot of options on the table. And what we want to do, this is your tax money. And so we want to be able to give it back in a fair way. And so I would really, again, encourage you to talk to your legislators, your delegate and senators, and let them know how you feel about it, because it's a fluid situation. There's a lot of ongoing discussion, and we won't be making those decisions until January and February. But it's certainly something to pay attention to.
All right, let's go to another caller. Jessica, you're on the air here on WRVA.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling in response to the governor's opinion piece with Governor Hogan that appeared in the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know how you sort of justify framing being a leader on climate change when your carbon reduction plan would reduce by about 10 million tons, but introducing the ACP would bring in 30 million tons of carbon pollution and the MVP, 40 million tons of carbon pollution. So I want to know how you think that math is supposed to work, and additionally, why you haven't visited communities along the paths of the MVP and ACP, including those in Southwest Virginia whose water has already been affected.
So she's talking about the pipelines. Yeah, right?
Absolutely. And Jessica, thank you for your call, and thank you for reading our op-ed in the Washington Post. And this is something in a bipartisan way Governor Hogan and I are working on to especially clean up the Chesapeake Bay, which, as you know, needs a lot of work. I'm actually going to leave the show here in just a minute to make an announcement in Virginia Beach at the Brock Center, the largest investment ever by a Virginia governor to support our environment and conservation in Virginia. So I would say stay tuned for that. As regarding the Mountain Valley Pipeline and the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, I will assure you and all listeners that this has been one of the most rigorous permitting processes. There is tremendous oversight. And to be fair, Jessica, there are people that are obviously opposed to the pipeline. There are people that are in favor of the pipeline. And as governor, I have tried to be as fair as I can to make sure that this is done with oversight, that if it moves forward, it's done abiding by our science and law. And so hopefully people will see across the Commonwealth that I am being fair and that I am a steward for our environment. And I think if you listen to the announcement that we'll be making in just about another hour, you will see that we're making a lot of progress with carbon reduction, ways that we can clean up the Chesapeake Bay, make our streams and rivers cleaner. So, and also putting more land in Virginia into conservation. So good things are happening Virginia, and we'll continue to work in that direction.
All right, we'll have to monitor your announcement in a couple hours, and we'll try to cover that tomorrow. But, you know, last week we had a guest on from the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League, and they were very frustrated, dare I say, angry with you, because they say you fired two appointees who were on the Air Quality Board. Their terms had expired, but you got rid of them, I think I'm correctly characterizing, they say prematurely, to change the final tally of an important vote for the passage of the pipeline.
Well, I didn't fire anybody. I mean, these were individuals. Their terms expired back in June.
Okay.
And we have a lot of commissions and boards, and it's my job, along with our Secretary of Commonwealth, to appoint qualified individuals to these boards, whether it be a college board or whether it be, in this case, the Air Board. And there are individuals that are interested in serving on these boards. These terms expired in June of this year, and so we had been processing applications. Our plans were to make those changes, and it just so happened that the timing was coincidental. But, you know, this process has gone on month after month after month, and it's just kind of like, well, how long should I wait before I, you know, replace these individuals? And
so they were replaced, forgive me for interrupting, you replaced them with somebody who would vote as they would have, or do you get the indication that it would have been a
I don't ask people how they're going to vote. I look for people that are that understand our environment, that understand the law, that understand science. And, you know, what has happened, we have replaced these two individuals. There are actually two on the Air Board and two on the Water Board. Mm-hmm. And it was so contentious that I have not expected them to vote in December. So the ones that have that are already on the board will be taking that vote. And that was supposed to happen this week, but because of the snow, they didn't meet. And I think they've postponed the meeting until the 19th of December. Mm-hmm.
Are there other people on boards whose terms have expired that you haven't replaced yet? Or
absolutely.
Is that a fair question for me to ask?
It is a fair question. And there are actually some boards that it's hard to find individuals that are willing to serve. And, mm-hmm. and this has, I think, brought that to light. And so I would ask all Virginians, if they're interested in serving Virginia, to look at the boards and commissions that are available. But this particular Air Board, there were individuals that were qualified and that were willing and anxious to serve. So we made that choice.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about medical marijuana earlier. One of the bills that I think might get a lot of attention in the General Assembly is the idea of expanding gambling.
Yes.
In the state. We're down to our last minute. Do you have any reaction as to how you would deal with different pieces of legislation that come up in the session?
Well, we reopen the Colonial Downs racetrack, which is horse, and there's horse racing. There are betting machines that are associated with that. Mm-hmm. We have several areas in Virginia that have expressed interest in opening casinos, one in Hampton Roads with the Pamunkey Indians, one out in Bristol. We also have sports betting. So there are a lot of things that will be on the table for the legislature this year. And I would just say, John, everything in moderation. I think if we are going to move forward with this, we need to do it carefully. But the point that needs to be made, if there are people that enjoy doing this, and there obviously are a lot of them, you know, let's allow them to do that in Virginia rather than seeing all of that revenue go to other states, because that's the way it's set up right now. We're sending a lot of money to other states that we could keep here in Virginia to use for things like transportation, education, et cetera. So I'm open-minded to it. It's just we need to be careful as we move forward with it.
Well, when we see you in January, we'll have a long list of pieces of legislation that have actually been filed as the General Assembly reconvenes here in Richmond. And we appreciate you taking this moment before the holidays to kind of give us a little preview.
I always appreciate being on here, and I look forward to seeing you in January. And I just hope that you and all your listeners have a safe and peaceful holiday season.
Thank you, sir. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, and it's Ask the Governor on News Radio WRVA. Once a month, we'll be back with the governor once the General Assembly reconvenes.